Let's get ready to rumble! Thank you, Bruce Buffer. Okay, that was funny. Every time I tried to record that, my dogs would bark in the other room. Welcome to God Meets the Grind, and welcome to Fight Night. I'm your host, Lance Leffler. Just a couple of notes. This is a different kind of Fight Night, where Jesus is on every card. Also note, this is not going to be the pay-per-view version. This is the YouTube version, but it's still going to be great. So let's go. Jesus is coming off a major victory in chapter 11, where he squared off with the Pharisees in their own octagon, where they were undefeated. We're in Jerusalem now, so Jesus is still the outsider, even though he created Jerusalem. Starting off Mark chapter 12, Jesus tells a story. He says, a man planted a vineyard, fenced it in, dug a wine press, did everything he could to make it awesome. And then he put the vineyard in the care of tenant farmers. And when he sent servants later on to gather some of the fruit, the tenants beat them. He does this a bunch of times, and the same thing happens. So finally, the owner sends his beloved son. Surely they'll respect him, he said. But they didn't. They killed the vineyard owner's son and threw him out of the vineyard. Jesus finishes the parable with a question. What do you think the vineyard owner will do to those tenants? That's right, he'll come and destroy them and give the vineyard to others. Referring to Israel as God's vineyard is a fixture in the Old Testament. And the religious leaders in the crowd that day knew they were the tenants. The servants who came for the grapes were the prophets that the rebellious leaders mistreated and killed. And the vineyard owner's son? Well, there was no missing Jesus' point. Then he quotes Psalm 118, verses 22 and 23 for them. The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This is the Lord's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. And then he drops the mic. From their own scriptures, Jesus points out that he's the new cornerstone, the one they have rejected. With this, the religious leaders start planning to kill Jesus. That's sort of ironic, isn't it? After the story about the vineyard? So the Pharisees and the Herodians put their heads together. This is the oddest couple I've ever seen. The ultra-conservative, anti-Rome religionists and the not-so-religious Roman sympathizers. In any event, here they come. This is round one of the big fight. They come with a burning political question. Should we pay taxes to Caesar? The Jews chafed under Roman rule. And I mean chafed, like horseback riding in the Sahara in a Speedo kind of chafed. Especially this sort of new poll tax that was collected. It had caused a Jewish revolt just a few years earlier. Whereas the Herodians were extremely loyal to Rome. So how's Jesus going to answer their big question? Jesus says, whose image is on the coin? Caesar's? Then give to Caesar what's Caesar's, and give to God what is God's. There's an interesting historical thing here. Since each Caesar would have coins minted with his image on them, they were actually considered his property. How does Jesus win this exchange? He doesn't take a side in this controversial topic. Next come the Sadducees. We haven't seen much of them in Mark's gospel, but they were the religious liberals, sort of like the Unitarians of their day. They didn't believe in an afterlife or the spirit world or any of that stuff we normally associate with religion. That's why they were sad, you see. If the Sadducees opened a burger joint, the burgers would just be day-old buns with a scrap of wilted lettuce and a dab of Miracle Whip. But they did know the Bible, so they tag the Pharisees and Herodians and jump in the ring. They come with a question about heaven. Well, not a question, really, but an argument that there isn't one. They cite the Old Testament law of levirate marriage. That's where if a husband dies and leaves no children, then his brother is supposed to marry his widow and have kids and keep his legacy going. The Sadducees think they see a chink in God's logic here. If you're going to believe in an afterlife, then what do you do with this situation? Imagine the husband dies childless, then his brother marries the widow, but he doesn't have any kids with her either. Then another brother marries her, etc. All seven brothers end up marrying her. So the Sadducees ask, whose wife is she in heaven? Jesus says they don't understand the power of God and they don't understand heaven either. There is no marriage in the afterlife. So the Sadducees' conundrum is shot to the hot place, which they also didn't believe in. Then Jesus says the most amazing thing. This is why I think there are literary wormholes in the Bible. Stick with me here. To defend the fact there's an afterlife, he points to a famous incident in the book of Exodus, where Moses is confronted by God in the burning bush. Jesus quotes Exodus chapter 3, verse 6, where God says, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Jesus says, see, he's not the God of the dead, but the living. These patriarchs of Israel all died hundreds of years before Moses, but Jesus makes the point that they're all still alive because of the verb tense. The hint was there in the text all along. God says he is the God of these guys who died a long time ago, not that he was their God. They're still alive. Isn't that amazing? So the Sadducees tap out. Then a scribe comes up to Jesus and asks him the big burning theological question of the day, which is the most important commandment? Jesus answers by appealing to Deuteronomy 6:4, an extremely important passage to the Jewish people. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And then Jesus adds Leviticus 19:18, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The scribe commends Jesus on his answer. He agrees that following these commands is more important than all the offerings and sacrifices you could offer. This is an important point here that the scribe is onto. The Jews had a problem with this, and so do Christians. God says it's better to obey than sacrifice. But that's our struggle. It's easier to sacrifice here and there, serve at a soup kitchen, give a donation, give up beer or chocolate for Lent or whatever. Nothing wrong with any of these things, of course. These are good and important things to do. The danger is that they can become a substitute for really loving God with all we've got and loving our neighbor as ourselves. Jesus says to the scribe, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." After this, it says nobody dared ask him a question. Jesus goes undefeated for the entire card. But we're not done. He goes into the temple, and he's teaching, and he asks, how can the scribes say that the Messiah is the son of David when David called him his Lord? Okay, let me explain this. Jesus is quoting Psalm 110, verse 1, a psalm written by Israel's great king David around 1000 BC. David speaks about the Messiah, the Christ, who would come from David's line. So that would make him one of his descendants, right? But David opens the psalm talking about having two lords. The first is obviously God. He uses the Hebrew covenant name for God, Yahweh. And the second lord is who? Well, if you know how the rest of the story goes, you know it's Jesus. But the scribes didn't. So what are they going to do with this psalm? Then Jesus straight up says, "Beware of the scribes." Just so you know, nobody would have dared say something like that. Jesus goes on to talk about how they seek after status. As my friend would say, they're clout chasers. They've misrepresented the God they serve. And keep in mind, the average person didn't have their own copy of the Bible to check things out. So what they knew about the Bible came from the religious leaders. That situation would repeat itself throughout much of Christian history, and it never went well. You can't trust people with that kind of authority and no accountability. Jesus ends with the chilling words, "They will receive the greater condemnation." Wow. It's warnings like this that have made me want to do anything but teach the Bible. But I keep feeling compelled to do it. What comforts me is that I have some good friends who know the Bible well, who aren't afraid to hold me accountable for my teaching and my life. With that, our big fight night comes to an end. And while Jesus comes out the clear winner, this confrontation with the powers that be will seal his doom. Or will it? We'll see. At the end of chapter 12, Jesus sits down in the temple next to the treasury and watches people bring their offerings. I used to do this when I was a pastor. I'm just kidding. Many rich people came and donated a lot of money. Then this poor widow comes and puts in two small copper coins that equal a penny. And Jesus commends the poor widow because she put in all she had. She loved God with her whole heart. So it's not about how much money you give to your church. According to this story, the cost she assumed was what manifested her love. This isn't a rant against the rich, and it's not that you should give all your stuff away. I think it's more about the fact that the crowds would have noticed the rich people giving lots and ignored the poor lady giving almost nothing that turned out to be everything. We do this with every aspect of our lives. We spotlight the great preachers and worship leaders and big-name speakers who we assume are out there making a difference. and think our little lives don't amount to much. But Jesus has already made it clear that the Christian life isn't like that. You have a role to play, whether that puts you on a big stage or on the streets of Calcutta or in a painfully average neighborhood in a flyover state. I believe we each have our own story to live for God by the grace that He gives, and that will be the measure of our lives. Thanks for listening. If you liked today's episode, please share it with somebody. Also, if you're on Facebook, would you go on and follow our God Meets the Grind Facebook page? For more encouragement, go to godmeetsthegrind.com.